Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of WrestleChat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York, and for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's Monday Night Raw at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Well, have you read the title of today's Monday Night Raw report? It's the Here We Go Again, because that is exactly how it feels, folks. It's exactly how it feels with the WWE, and it's felt that way for a considerable length of time now, that the WWE is literally just making the same mistakes over and over and over again. And while you may be seeing good quality wrestling or fun matches to an extent, you are not seeing logical, consistent, or well-written storylines or characterizations. And it is absolutely, at least for me, it is killing my enjoyment of this product because I'm just not buying into any of it anymore. Now, you could say, well, you know, wrestling's like that. How can you buy into a lot of the stuff? How do you buy into The Fiend? How do you buy into this? How do you buy into that? And I get that. But there is a logic that should actually run wrestling, that at least the characters themselves, no matter how outlandish they may be or illogical, do things that are logical to at least their character. In other words, I understand wrestling isn't logical. If you whip a guy to the ropes that's hurt, he's not going to turn his back and hit the ropes and spring off. He's going to fall on his face. He's going to hit it with his chest, right? I get that. It's not logical. But when characters that you have crafted, and we've come to know, not so much as the person playing them, but as the character that they are, does things that is totally illogical, where you say, why in the world would a character ever do that in a million years, or why would this particular character certainly wouldn't do it? This is when we start to say, why do I bother? Because I no longer feel like I know any of these people. You see, you get used to things like this with episodic television where you think you know the characters and their reactions. And yeah, you may be surprised once in a while, but it's still somewhere in the basis of logic. WWE has thrown this all out the window. So we start with Rhea Ripley being called to the ring by Adam Pearce to be given her new title belt. That's fine. Looks good. Looks good. Dominic Mysterio comes out. And before he can say a word, Cody Rhodes' music hits. And I knew what was coming, and I said, please, God, no, do not allow this to happen. And sure enough, the guy who should most be a part of the Money in the Bank ladder match, Dominic Mysterio, is not going to be a part of it. Rhea Ripley accepts the challenge of Cody Rhodes for Dominic, and at Money in the Bank, Dominic Mysterio takes on Cody Rhodes. And I say to myself, why? Why? Why would Cody Rhodes not want to be in Money in the Bank? Think about that for a moment. Now, you might be able to get me to suspend my disbelief a little bit if you said Brock Lesnar's going to fight Cody Rhodes at Money in the Bank. I would say, well, okay, maybe. Maybe Cody is so mad at Brock Lesnar that he just usurps his chance at the Money in the Bank and says, okay, I'd rather just take on Brock Lesnar and get this done with. Maybe. But Dominic Mysterio? So Cody Rhodes has no interest in a Money in the Bank briefcase. No interest in an automatic title shot at any time. None. Zero. And neither does Dominic. Both of them would rather pick a fight with each other, which is a meaningless fight. If Dominic wins, so what? If Cody Rhodes wins, so what? It does exactly what? Cody Rhodes is mired in a feud with Brock Lesnar. Should be concentrating on Brock Lesnar. certainly should want to be in the Money in the Bank match. Dominic Mysterio had a feud with no one right up until last week. Certainly should have wanted to be in the qualifier for a Money in the Bank match. But no, because in the illogical world of the WWE, two of their top stars have no interest in the title. They'd just rather fight each other for no reason whatsoever. So this aggravated me because I was looking forward to seeing at least Dominic Mysterio in the Money in the Bank match. Maybe he doesn't win it. But being in it would have been exciting because I would have figured he's got to be one of the favorites. His character is tailor-made to be one of these guys who's holding the briefcase. Tailor-made for it. And you got LA Knight in there. Yeah, he could be a good contender too. But at the end of the day, there would at least have been two or three people in there that you say they could potentially get it. With Dominic, in my opinion, being the favorite and the most likely, or at least the best choice. Would have added a little bit of excitement and unpredictability to the Money in the Bank match. No such luck. Dominic Mysterio apparently has no interest. Apparently Cody Rhodes has no interest. Because after all, Dominic Mysterio insulted him last week, so to hell with the title. To hell with being in the main event of a Money in the Bank match. No, no, to hell with that. You insulted me. I have to get my revenge on you for insulting me. That doesn't make sense. It just doesn't make sense. Now, if they are both in the Money in the Bank ladder match, that makes sense. But neither one of them? So this opening segment left me a little blah, Todd, because I was really hoping Dominic would be in Money in the Bank, and now we know for sure he's not going to be.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, for not this last week, for the last couple of weeks, he was in a real good feud, but now they just like, you know what, we're just going to throw you under the bus. You're just going to wrestle Cody Rhodes at Money in the Bank. And I'm disappointed he's not in that Money in the Bank match.
So am I, because, again, it would have added an air of unpredictability to it, and I would have been anxious to see if maybe he would have won it and the fun they could have had with Dominic holding that Money in the Bank briefcase. But no, in the world of the WWE, you're, like I said, two of your top guys on Monday Night Raw have no interest. None whatsoever, apparently. So then we get Becky Lynch. She comes to the ring and delivers a promo. And she wants the belt back, obviously, and she said she wants to win Money in the Bank, which obviously that would be the case. Zoe Stark comes out and insults her and yells at her. And sometimes Zoe Stark, I don't know, she definitely needs a mouthpiece, in my opinion. Now, Becky Lynch, honest to God, she blew a couple lines too. This was not the world's best promo by any stretch of the imagination. But it was all right, and what it led to, of course, is Chelsea Green versus Becky Lynch. Not the world's greatest match, but I like Chelsea Green, and I like Becky Lynch. And it's a warm-up for her Money in the Bank match. I get it. That's fine. There's nothing really wrong with this match. It's just that it is what it is. Nobody ever thought in a million years that Chelsea Green would come close to winning it. It's a warm-up match for Becky Lynch's Money in the Bank participation. And, you know, it was what it was, Todd. It's not bad, but it's just – it's also not overly interesting because we kind of know where it's going.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, last night when Becky Lynch did cut her promo, there were a couple botches in that and a couple botch like things. And, you know, it was just – like a botch fest right there.
Zoe Stark, too. Zoe Stark has this habit of, I don't know whether it's mumbling or whether she is talking too loud. I'm not sure what it actually is, whether she, the mic's too close to her mouth, but sometimes I'm like, I don't know what she said. I'm not 100% sure what she said. And that can be annoying. But overall, I mean, this match is what it was. It wasn't supposed to be anything major. And it was okay. I'm not going to pick on it too much. It was all right. Then we get to something I'm going to pick on. Matt Riddle versus Damian Priest in a qualifying match for Money in the Bank. Tell me if I'm wrong. Damian Priest had a title shot and lost last week. Can you please explain to me why that makes him someone who's qualified to go in there and get a Money in the Bank ladder match qualifying shot at the title? You would have thought that that would put him at the back of the line. Back of the line. I don't know why Damian Priest would be in there. It baffles me. It really does. And it aggravates me because, oh, Dominic can't be in it. But the guy who lost to the champion last week, he's in it. And not only is he in it, he wins it. Now, I get it. They're trying to make Damian Priest a face. You see this coming 100 miles away. They're doing it slow to make sure that it's the right move, but it's coming. But at the end of the day, I'm sorry to tell you, he does not belong to having a Money in the Bank qualifying match, not based upon the fact that he lost a championship match the prior week. Now, Matt Riddle, without Orton, we predicted this. We said this from Jump Street. Matt Riddle without Orton, it's not going to fly. Matt Riddle's going nowhere fast. He's already lost to Damian Priest, so if he's going to have a big feud with Gunther, what do you think is going to happen? You think he's going to beat Gunther? Can't beat Damian Priest? No, he's not going to. Now, you had an interesting moment where Damian Priest and Gunther went eye to eye, and I said, maybe we're going to see the Sergeant Slaughter Iron Sheik moment, where both of these guys are going to get into a little jaw-jacking. But no, Damian Priest continued the heel persona and told them, go pick the bones if that's what you want to do, which they did. I don't know what to tell you about it other than it's a good match. It was a very good match. And Matt Riddle, I would say, yeah, okay, he may be somebody you want to qualify for it. Damian Priest, it should not have been. But at least it's two top guys. So we now have Damian Priest, arguably the biggest name in Money in the Bank right now. Arguably the guy who would have to be the favorite, I would assume, based upon the fact that he's the highest profile guy in it. Nonetheless, I just don't see how. I don't see how that is logical storytelling. You've given a Money in the Bank qualifying match to a member of the Judgment Day that the very prior week lost a title shot to the current champion. But you didn't give it to the Judgment Day member that hasn't lost. Of course, is Dominic Mysterio. Now, before people say, well, what about Finn Balor? Well, no. Later on, we find out why Finn Balor didn't want to be in the Money in the Bank match, because he's going to get his title shot. So that does make sense. Why try to outdo five or six other people to just earn a title shot when you've got one? That I get. This I do not, Mike. I do not understand this. And again, the problem isn't that Damian Priest is in the match. I'm glad he's in the match, you know. The problem is it's illogical that he's in the match based on what happened the previous week.
Yeah, it's obviously, you know, that he's not in the match. Yeah, what happened last week, and that's the thing. And again, I'm still waiting for them to put Dominic in there. I mean, we'll get to him in a little while. I mean, frankly, I can't see how they're not using him more, but that's neither here nor there. Yeah, this guy, we know why he didn't get his. We know why Finn isn't in the Money in the Bank. We know because he's already got his shot. Why would you need the case if you've already got a shot? But then again, there's been times in the past when a guy will get a shot and then he goes on to win the case anyway. So, you know.
Yeah, you know, we have a little backstage exchange where we now see, of course, Finn Balor talking to McDonough, right? And Damian Priest comes up and basically says, that came later after Finn made his speech, which was funny. We'll get to that. But clear, the Judgment Day's done. That's very clear. Rhea Ripley and Dominic are going to be their own people. And obviously Finn and Damian Priest are going to go their separate way. Finn is going to have some kind of affiliation with McDonough. We get that. What I don't get is this. If that was going to be the case, why in the world would you have had Seth Rollins pin Damian Priest? Could you have had a conclusion to the match that was, you know, double count out or double disqualification or something? If you wanted to say, well, Finn Balor and Damian Priest are on the outs a little bit, why didn't you have Finn Balor show up and get Damian Priest disqualified so Priest could say, well, hey, thanks a lot. Had a title shot, you got me disqualified. And Finn could have said, well, I was afraid you were going to get hurt. He was going to do this move or whatever. Yeah, you know, it was an accident. I didn't think I'd get you disqualified. Now he's in the Money in the Bank match, so he can say, well, I'm going to correct that because I'm going to win the Money in the Bank briefcase and I'm going to go for the title. Okay. But that's not what happened. He was flat out pinned. You got the wrong guy in there. It should have been Dominic. Absolutely should have been Dominic. Now, as far as Matt Riddle is concerned, they're still using Matt Riddle as like he's a semi-top guy, but let's face it. He's the bottom of the food chain semi-top guy. He's the guy who's going to lose to the guys who really are like in the middle or upper part of the top. I don't see him going anywhere. I think this last issue that he had might have been the one that broke the camel's back. Yeah, they're going to put him against Gunther. He's not going to win. He can't beat Damian Priest. They're not going to let him take Gunther's streak, let alone the title. So I don't see it. I don't know what they'll do with him. We'll find out, I suppose, as the months go by. Anyway, Ricochet and Bronson Reed, because of what happened last week, Ricochet and Bronson Reed, I'm beginning to see why Vince McMahon didn't see a lot in Bronson Reed. At first, I said, he's got to be crazy if he doesn't see anything in Bronson Reed. The guy is a big, monstrous-looking guy. He's very agile. He reminds me a little bit of Vader in the sense that he's agile, but he's huge. He's got the power and the agility. The problem now I see very clearly is he doesn't have a personality. He tries to be that monster heel, and he cannot be. And I don't think it's going too far. I just don't. Anyway, Ricochet and Bronson put on a pretty good match. Nakamura ends up coming down. And at the end of the day, he costs Ricochet the match by disqualification after Bronson Reed throws Ricochet on top of Nakamura, and they get into a little bit of a fight. I guess this is going to lead to a three-way dance or something. I don't know. I'm not sure what this is going to lead to eventually. I know Ricochet is in the Money in the Bank, so is Nakamura. I'm assuming that maybe Bronson Reed's going to get involved in this somehow. I just don't think it's a very interesting storyline. I do think that there's going to be some – I don't know whether the tension between Ricochet and Nakamura is just to make more interest in the Money in the Bank ladder match, or they're actually going to have a feud. I assume it's the former one. I think it's just to try to make more interest in the Money in the Bank ladder match. I don't think they want to flip either one of these guys heel, nor do I think they want to divide the fans on them. I'm still impressed with Bronson Reed as an athlete, but I see exactly what they are saying when they say he doesn't really have the ability to get the audience to care. Now, had that been a guy like Vader, that would have been a whole different story, right? he had that ability to get the fans to be like, damn, you know. Bronson Reed doesn't have that. And he probably has all the ability of Vader plus. But he doesn't have that extra something. And I'm not sure. See, that's the hard thing to teach, Mike. You can't really teach it. Either have it or you don't. I don't see Bronson Reed as having it.
He doesn't have the ability of Otis. I mean, they're basically the same guy. The difference is Otis has the ability to make people care about him.
Absolutely correct. Now, Bronson Reed, he's got to make people hate him, and they just don't. They're indifferent. He comes out and they're like, eh. And maybe when he does a couple of his flips, they're like, ooh, that's impressive. And that gets a bit of a pop or whatever. But aside from that, nothing. And this crowd, by the way, with the exception of one spot, which we'll talk about, this crowd was kind of dead. Talk about a difference between last week, right? This crowd was mediocre at best. At best. So a pretty good match overall. I like Ricochet's ring work. I like Bronson Reed's ring work. But the problem is there's no heat on Bronson Reed whatsoever. And because of that, it's just not as fun as it could be, Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Yeah, like you said, Bronson, all three of those guys are pretty decent wrestler. But like you said, with Bronson Reed, the only problem with him, he don't look like a heel or anything or have any heat. No,
I mean, he looks like a heel. He just doesn't have the, I don't know. He always looks like I'm playing the part of a heel, but not well. That's the only thing I can say. And when you've got three guys in the ring with the combined talent of Ricochet, Bronson Reed, and Nakamura. Ricochet cannot use a microphone to save his life. Bronson Reed is not far behind. Nakamura barely speaks the language and still comes off with a ton more charisma than either one of them or both of them combined, Mike. And you would think that they would understand that and say, I've got to make some kind of improvements on how I present myself, because if Nakamura can come out there and virtually say nothing, still have more appeal and still appeal more to the fans and reach that audience than they do, they're doing something wrong.
They're doing something wrong. Nakamura is a lot like Asuka. You know, Asuka has a certain thing about her. Yeah, they're trying to make her a heel now, but people aren't buying it because they know the real Asuka and they know her charisma. That's what he – it would be very hard for them to try to make Nakamura a heel because they know Nakamura, they like Nakamura, fans know him, fans like him, and it's going to be hard for him to be a heel at any given time. Now, is he happy doing what he's doing? Probably is, maybe not, I don't know. Whatever, Nakamura is Nakamura. But, Nakamura has this charisma. He don't need to say but a couple of sentences to get his point across. He's got enough understanding of the English language to say, you know, a 4, 5, 6-word sentence, maybe a couple of them, and get his point across. You know, he speaks enough of the language to do that.
Yeah, and you know, when they did try to make him a heel briefly, he understood it, and it was working to an extent. I don't know what it is about Ricochet, because he's a great athlete, but Ricochet is just one of those guys who, for whatever bizarre reason, said nothing in Lucha Underground as Prince Puma and had more charisma then he does his Ricochet. I don't get that. Prince Puma was actually an interesting character. You found yourself rooting for him. You found yourself, interested in him. Ricochet Ricochet, I'm like, yeah, he's going to come out and do a lot of fun moves. It'll be a good match, but I don't care. And see, that's a problem. And Bronson Reed's the same way. He comes out like, I'm a human bulldozer, and I'm going to beat everybody's ass. And he really doesn't. And it's just like, ah, whatever. Nakamura just has this. The thing about Nakamura is this. The charisma level of Nakamura is his main asset, probably. But he has this underlying thing where whether he wins or loses or draws or whether he's a face or whether he's a heel, he has this sort of thing where you always think he's a heartbeat away from being really dangerous and a top guy. No matter whether he's counting the ring lights or he's on top, you're always like, yeah, but tomorrow he could be the top. You know what I mean? He just carries himself that way. It's an intangible. It's not something you can really teach. And it's a shame because Ricochet can be fun to watch, but, you know, the fans are starting to go ho-hum. Anyway, we have Raquel Rodriguez is next. Well, let me go to the Balor thing first because Balor came out first because this was funny. Balor comes out and the fans already know he's terrible on the mic, so they have no, they're not interested in what Balor has to say. Now, they were a little bit interested because they thought he might say, you know, the Judgment Day isn't working the way I wanted it to work. So fans are waiting at first. But the minute he says Seth Rollins, people are like, yeah, no, I don't care. And from that moment on, they basically just sing Seth Rollins' song. To the point where in reality, not even kayfabe, Finn Balor can't get out what he's told to say. He just can't. And for once, it's kind of a shame because what he had to say made a little bit of sense. But the fans just were not having it. They don't care about Finn Balor. And to his credit, or the writer's credit, I'm not sure which, Seth Rollins or the writers know this. And that is why they had Seth Rollins basically say, this is the Finn Balor I've been waiting for. This guy, the guy that I fought way back then, if you come as that Finn Balor, you got a real shot at this. If you come at this whiny little complaining whatever, you have no shot whatsoever. So I guess what they're trying to say is we understand that we destroyed Finn Balor's credibility. We understand that we destroyed his reputation. We understand that this version of Finn Balor nobody gives one single damn about. So we are going to have Seth Rollins call on the old Finn Balor and hope that you guys remember that. And they'll probably have a fantastic match. I have no doubt they'll have a fantastic match at Money in the Bank. And Seth Rollins' job at Money in the Bank will probably be to sell that the old Finn Balor is back to try to give him some credibility because he's lost it all. He's lost it all in Judgment Day. Judgment Day did Finn Balor zero favors. Zero favors. And maybe he'll get some of it back, and maybe whatever he's going to form with McDonough here, maybe this will be better. To wait and see, Mike, but it was funny that the whole crowd just refused to stop singing Seth Rollins songs.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that song is over. I mean, I'm not going to say it's gotten to the point of the what chance, but it's over. It's obviously over because he'll come out and sit there for a couple of minutes at the front of the ramp there, and he'll just listen to it, you know, and conduct it, and then he'll get into the ring, and the first few minutes of him in the ring is, well, him conducting the song as well. So that's 4 minutes right there of just that song, right? It's over right now. Now, how long will it remain to be over? I don't know. But, yeah. Right now, he's over as a face, and he's over as with this song, and he doesn't need to do the whole laughing Joker thing because this thing is right now is carrying him. And as far as you know what you said with Nakamura, yeah, you could basically buy him at any given time. You could buy him going against Seth Rollins, or you could buy him possibly going against Roman Reigns, because that's how that's how he carries himself, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So we will see if we can get some resurgence out of this. It's a fun segment, Todd. You know, at some point I was like, I really want to hear if Finn Balor does have something good to say. Maybe this is his promo. Maybe this is his moment to say, see, I'm not really that bad on the mic. I have something really important to say, and this is going to be like my moment of saying, I wasted my time. I've done this, that, and the other thing. That Finn Balor is dead. I'm coming after Seth Rollins, whatever. And he never got a chance to say it because the fans just would not be quiet.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, this Finn, the Judgment Day Finn Balor is not even working, not working for anybody. Like you said, when he first came up to the main roster, he did the demon thing. That sort of worked. The original Finn Balor, not the Judgment Day Finn Balor, the original gimmick. It was working. The first two gimmicks.
You know, Finn Balor has a problem, and that is he doesn't really have a gimmick, and he doesn't really have a huge personality. I guess it worked in Japan when he was doing the Bullet Club, but it didn't work here. It's not working. Let's face it, his most popular form of Finn Balor is the demon. Demon says nothing. Nothing. He needs to. It's too late for him to work on it. He's a veteran. Finn Balor should never have been presented the way Finn Balor was presented. Finn Balor should have been presented like Daniel Bryan was presented, which is he's always the underdog because he's not really very big. He's always fighting an uphill battle. He's always out-muscled. He's always out-struck, but he doesn't give up. And he's a really good wrestler, and if you make the mistake of underestimating him, he'll catch you. Instead, they presented Finn Balor as, I'm just as tough as you, even though you're 6'8" and I'm 5'8". I can out-punch you even if you're a Golden Gloves boxer. I can absorb all the punishment in the world that you can give me, even though guys twice my size cannot. And people didn't buy it. People were just like, well, that's just ridiculous. See, Daniel Bryan never did that. People all the time say, you pick on smaller wrestlers, but you like Daniel Bryan. Yes, because Daniel Bryan wrestled the way a guy his size should wrestle. He always took into consideration, I'm not a big guy. I can't be brawling with this guy. I can't be absorbing, you know, five of his finishers. I can't do that. We have to wrestle a logical match in which I do the best I can with my ability, realizing that my size is a detriment, usually, unless his opponent was the same size. It worked. That's why everybody rooted for Daniel Bryan. He was likable. He was the underdog. We knew how good he was, but we knew it was going to be an uphill battle. Finn Balor wants to come out and be the Undertaker at 5'6". And that is a problem, and it's always been his problem, Mike. And until they solve that, he's always just going to be the way he is.
Right, and think about this. You got two younger guys in AEW, in Jack Perry and Darby Allin, right? They're basically Daniel Bryan clones, and they get it, you know? Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. You have to be able to, you have to know what your strengths and your weaknesses are. That's all. Now, there are people that's the opposite. I'll tell you one that's the opposite, Karrion Kross. He's a pretty big guy. He's not a giant guy, but he's a pretty big guy. And he oversells. You know, Rey Mysterio gives him one punch, and, oh, down he goes. And it's like, well, okay, you've knocked down a guy that size? He oversells. Finn undersells. And you're just left with, I don't believe either one of them. See, that's the problem. That's why Shawn Michaels was a master of that. Shawn Michaels would get in there with a guy like Rey Mysterio and tease, I'm usually the fastest, most agile guy. I'm not today. And it's throwing me off my game. He'd get in there with a guy like Sid and be like, well, I can be as fast as I want to be. My stuff isn't really affecting him all that much. And when he catches me, I'm gone. He's throwing me around like a rag doll. I'm not standing there punching it out with Sid. He understood exactly what he had to sell and what they had to sell about him, and that's why we had a lot of really good Shawn Michaels matches. To say Finn Balor knows a lot of good moves and, you know, he executes them well, that's fine, but the psychology with Finn Balor is not there. It's just not. I hope he gets into some form. He was a little better in NXT because he was around people who were a little more his whatever. And NXT crowds are more forgiving of that. They just want to see a long match and a good match. In the WWE, they want to see something different than that, a little bit different than that. And I don't know if Finn's giving it to him. You know, Seth Rollins kind of threw a hint at him when he said, I'm able to roll with the punches. I'm able to change. I'm able to give the fans what they want. You notice that Seth threw that in there. And that's why this is the best version of Seth Rollins, because I'm able to adjust. I'm able to change myself when I need to. I thought that was really shooting from the hip a little bit, Mike.
I thought so, too, and that's the thing. I mean, he can do a match with, you know, an AJ Styles and then come back and do a match with a Finn Balor. And it's going to be a good match because he knows what he's doing, and he's probably, other than AJ, he's probably the best wrestler, the best professional wrestler in the company right now. That's how good he is. You know, this is, and he's what, 10 years younger than AJ? So,
yep.
So yeah, I mean, look, this is a guy that if they want to, he can hold that title a year, you know, like he did the last time. You know, when he was on that run with the Authority, and he was holding that title for what, a year, 6-8 months, a year, whatever it was. You know, he was the guy in the company. You know,
yeah.
He was that guy, and he can be that guy again.
Yeah, now maybe I'm reading a little bit too much into it, Mike, but I even thought when he said, look, I've done some really bad things in my career. I didn't think he was really meaning my character did evil, nasty things to people. I really thought he was saying, you know, wink, wink, nod, nod, I've had some bad gimmicks that really, you know, could have destroyed my career, but I rolled with the punches and changed them when I saw the fan reaction, and Finn doesn't do that.
That's right, and that's the thing. I mean, look, you've talked about what happened with AJ Styles and how his career in the WWE wasn't going well until he had that meeting with Vince, and he asked Vince flat out, what do you want me to do? Right?
Yep. What do you expect of me? Exactly. So, you know, it was a fun little segment. It'll be a good match, so I'm happy for that at least. And this is the first time that the crowd really came alive. We then had Chad Gable versus Eric from the Viking Raiders. Oh, my God, are the Viking Raiders done? The Viking Raiders are completely done, and it is just a shame. They had some really, really cool makeup this week, by the way, especially Valhalla. It's a shame. And then, you know, she runs at Maxine Dupree and gets probably the world's worst arm drag I maybe have ever seen. It just made me laugh out loud because I'm just like, oh, my God, that was awful. Just awful. The match, what was it, 2 minutes? You know, I like Chad Gable, so great. I'm glad Chad Gable's getting on a win, you know, streak a little bit. But Jesus, talk about throwing the Viking Raiders to the wolves.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, they just want to throw them on the bus and turn them to jobbers. Like they're sending them to Jobberville, Jobber City.
Man, Jobbers with a capital J. I mean, wow. Now, I should mention a little bit of news. What I'm hearing is that both Mace and Mansoor are going to be repackaged. There's no more Maximum Male models. They're going to give them a different gimmick. We'll see what happens. I still say it could have worked. Still say they were on the right track with it, with the Alpha Academy versus the Maximum Male models, but they bailed on it. So I guess we'll have to wait and see what the future is for Mansoor and Mace. But, man, the Viking Raiders, Mike, come out with all those vignettes, and they brought back Sarah Logan, and you thought this was going to be something big, and, man, it's just crashed and burned.
Yeah, it's just crashed and burned, but here's the deal. You mentioned that bad arm drag, right? But the thing is, you got to look at who is doing the arm drag. She's not a wrestler. So I think the way they're going to play that is they're going to play it as saying he's taking her under his wing. You know, she's going to be the woman in the group, and he's decided to take her under his wing and trying to teach her to get her ready for her first match, right? And that's the first, you don't expect a person that has never been in the ring before to do a great arm drag, right?
Well, I mean, there's no question that that's where they're going, that Chad Gable is bringing along Maxine Dupri to be a wrestler. However, where we disagree is it should have been a perfect arm drag. Because otherwise you're saying, well, Chad Gable taught her, but I guess he didn't teach her very well because it sucked. No, no, no. You want her to do a really, really good one, even if that's the only thing she can do. I mean, I think there would have been a really funny angle if Chad Gable could then say, well, we only had time to teach her one move, but she did it well. Well, now he can say, well, I tried to teach her, but it still sucks. And then, of course, you have to have Sarah Logan sell that, which is a little even worse. If I'm Sarah Logan, I want her to do a really good arm drag so fans can say, whoa, where did that come from? And Chad Gable could be like, yeah, I taught her that one, and she did it perfect. And Sarah Logan could say, okay, well, you know, she did it perfectly, and that's why my character sold it. When you do it half-assed, then it looks like Chad Gable didn't teach her very well. She's not very talented, and Sarah Logan had to sell something that was lousy. So on all three things, it doesn't work for me. That is the gimmick, you're right. But I want her to be able to do at least one thing well so that they can say, now we can move on to lesson two, you know, how to do an arm drag. It's a shame, though, because I think the Viking Raiders still had promise. But anyway, backstage, we get more of this Kevin Owens exploding thing. I've heard people say they love it. Kevin Owens, you know, flying off the handle and being a hothead. Oh, it's funny. It's great. Yeah, it's funny. But again, I don't want my tag team champions to be the Bushwhackers. Sami Zayn is already funny. I don't need Kevin Owens to be funny too. So now Kevin Owens being funny is forcing Sami Zayn to be serious, and Sami Zayn is better at being funny. So what you've done is you've literally taken a funny person and a person who's much better being serious and straight and reversed the role. And said, oh, no, no, you do this. It would be like Chris Jericho saying, well, okay, we're going to team up Chris Jericho with Raven, and Raven's going to be the funny guy, and Chris Jericho's going to be serious. Well, yeah, it might work because Scotty's actually a funny guy in real life, but the character Raven isn't. And you're just wasting Chris Jericho's comedic chops for a guy whose character is not going to benefit by it. What do they call Kevin Owens? The prize fighter, right? Kevin Owens should be the guy who's deadly serious. It should be Sami Zayn, who's still a little bit zany and off the, you know, off his rocker a little bit, and he has to keep reeling in his friend saying, come on, Sammy, you know, we're the tag team champions now. We got to keep it serious. No, it's Sami Zayn trying to pull in Kevin Owens, and that's illogical because it's exactly the opposite of the way it should be. So that bothers me. I'm not saying it's not funny, Mike. I'm just saying that now you've got two funny guys, and I just don't get that.
Right, and that's the thing. Think about it this way. Classic comedy teams, what did they all have in common? Abbott and Costello, Martin and Lewis, you know, those type
yep.
of people, right? What did they have in common? You had a straight man, and you had the funny man, right? The jokester,
mm-hmm.
the crazy guy, you know? I mean, Dean Martin was the straight man in that group. Abbott was the straight man in that group, right? And,
yeah.
of course, Costello and Jerry Lewis, of course, that goes without saying. That's why, yeah, Martin Lewis broke up and had their problems and all that stuff. But when they were going good, you know, the straight man was always, it was the straight man, it was the comedy man, it was the straight man, it was the funny man, right? So that's what, when that team's going good, Kevin Owens is a straight man. You know,
yeah, and Mike, let me give you a good example. Let me give you a better example just in wrestling. What would have happened if in Team RK-Bro, they said, okay, Randy Orton's going to be the weird guy who comes in and says, oh, no, and it's Matt Riddle who has to keep reeling him in and be serious and say, come on, Randy, focus. You can't do this. You can't do that. It wouldn't have worked because you would have been wasting the thing that Matt Riddle does best, which is being this irreverent, weird, funny guy, and you would have done the, you would have wasted what Randy Orton does best, which is being all business, straight to the point, hard nosed, let's get this done. That's why their team was so popular, because all of the nonsense of Matt Riddle, Randy Orton had to kind of suffer through and try to keep him on the straight and narrow, and he was absorbing all that nonsense and just saying, Jesus, you know, he's a great wrestler, but God, he's so annoying, and I'm trying to, okay, well, that should have been basically the same thing with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. Kevin Owens should have been like, we're the tag team champions now. This is serious business. We shouldn't be worried about the, you know, what Jey Uso is going to do with his life. We shouldn't be worried about whatever. We need to take care of business. Instead, they said, we're going to make Kevin Owens this quick-tempered guy now that if you look at him sideways, he's like, ah! And that was never Kevin Owens. That makes Kevin Owens like a loose cannon. Why, what? I don't get it. And Sami Zayn is the voice of reason? That doesn't sound right, Todd. And it's not working for me.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, this whole thing, it's not working for me either. They should reverse roles in that. You should have Sami Zayn be the funny one, and you should have Kevin Owens be the straight one. Like on SmackDown right now, where they have Butch being the nutty and going wild and everything, being the funny one sort of, and you had the other two guys of the Bro and Brute trying to hold them back.
Yeah, I think it's a problem. I know some people like it and they think it's funny. That's fine. But do you want two funny guys to be the tag team champions? I don't know. Anyway, because of whatever happened to the other guy from Imperium, we have Ludwig Kaiser and Gunther going for the title in our feature match. Good, solid match. Gunther's main strength is he doesn't overplay his hand. Now, I know I've said a million times, and I will continue to say it. You can't get on Roman Reigns or John Cena or whatever and say, oh, five moves of doom, all he does the same things over and over again. That's all that Gunther does. He basically just slams you and chops you. That's pretty much it. But the deal is this. He's so old school because there's nothing that he does that looks like, well, that's just done to be flashy. That's just done to show off my athletic ability. That's just done to get a pop from the crowd. Everything he does looks like this is wearing down an opponent. It's meant to wear down or hurt an opponent. He looks like he's fighting you. See, that's the difference. Wrestling is supposed to be a fight. Not a dance, not a circus, not an acrobatic performance. It's supposed to be a fight. And Gunther always looks like he's fighting you. That's good. That's a very positive thing. I don't care if he does two moves. It doesn't matter because he always looks like he's fighting you. Ludwig Kaiser, you know, he does once in a while a flashy move or two, but, you know, still, it's working out okay. Now, I don't know if you guys noticed, but when Ludwig Kaiser tried to do the suicide dive, he got his foot hit the middle rope, and he came very close to a nasty fall. Very close. If he didn't have the momentum he had, if he had jumped a little less, fervently, he would have crashed and burned. So you got to be careful of that, because sometimes your toe area where your boots are, that will hook that bottom rope if you don't do it quickly and correctly. And he managed to make it look decent, and Kevin Owens still sold it and fell down and stuff. But boy, Mike, I don't know if you noticed, but that was close to a disaster.
That was almost as big a disaster as what happened with what's his name and Enzo and all that stuff, or the big fella in not clearing the ropes and apparently I understand that Vince got hurt or something. I don't know. So that's why they couldn't use him. And frankly, you know, I still say I like Gunther's old school style, but he should not be the leader of that group. It should be Kaiser, you know, but that's neither here nor there. Yeah, he's old school. There's a reason why the matches he had with Sheamus and with Drew McIntyre, the fans just love him. That there's a reason why those matches the fans just love, because all three of those guys are basically, what does Sheamus do? You know, bro kick, you know, white noise, suplexes, punches, 10 beats of the Bowery, you know, I just went through his moveset. What does Drew McIntyre do? Maybe a couple of suplexes, maybe some slams, clothesline, Claymore kick, and the headbutt, the Glasgow kiss. You know,
right.
I just gave you Drew McIntyre's moves set. So they're all three of those guys are basically the same guy. That's why they're so old school. They're the same guy, you know. And so that's why those matches between those three guys were so good, that the people actually love those matches.
Yeah, and you know, the thing with Gunther is he's smart enough to undersell. Even to big opponents, he doesn't completely oversell. But he does sell on a sliding scale. In other words, you might say, oh, come on, you know, Sheamus hit him really hard and he barely sold it. He sold it a little bit, but barely sold it. But when somebody like Sami Zayn does it, he doesn't sell it at all. To the point where the announcer's even like, well, if Sami's going to chop Gunther, that's kind of dumb because it's not going to work. Now, if Drew McIntyre had done it, Gunther would have sold it a little bit at least. So even though I think at times he slightly undersells guys who are bigger than him or even his own size, he does at least adjust the scale depending. So that's a good thing. Now, two good things came out of this match, I think. One is that Sami Zayn won with that Blue Thunder Bomb. I've never seen him win a match with it. And it's about time, because this is the secret to, like, AJ Styles' success. He can win with three or four moves where you say, legitimately, I've watched him win. I've watched him win with the Calf Crusher, the Styles Clash, the Phenomenal Forearm. Any one of those can finish off a person, and has. When's the last time Sheamus won anything with White Noise? And yet he keeps going for the pin. One, two, you already know it's not going to be a three. He's never won anything with it. You got to have like two finishers minimum that really do finish people. You can have that signature move, but you got to have that backup that once in a while wins you a match. Sami Zayn was falling into that category. The Blue Thunder Bomb was basically the same as White Noise. It wasn't winning. So finally, somebody falls to it, and you're like, good, because now it's not automatically they're going to kick out. That's a good thing. Second good thing that comes out of it, in my opinion, is that I think we're seeing that they're testing Gunther to see if he's going to drop that belt somehow, and it's probably going to be in some ridiculous stipulation match where he does not get pinned or made to submit so that he can go for a major title. I think they got major title aspirations for him. It's probably for the best because, to be honest with you, he treats that title somewhat better than – certainly better, at least, than, you know, Austin Theory's. And sometimes it feels more important even than the bigger titles. Maybe not Roman Reigns, but certainly Seth Rollins up to now because it's a new title. And I think Gunther maybe passed that test. So we'll see how that goes. As far as this being a bad Raw, it wasn't a bad Raw. But it was illogical that saw Dominic Mysterio taken virtually out of what every wrestler should be thriving for, and that is a place in the Money in the Bank match. So Ricochet is in there. Ricochet is in there. LA Knight is in there. Dominic Mysterio is not. Cody Rhodes don't want to be. I'm sorry, that does not make any sense at all. Not at all. And it makes Money in the Bank feel like, well, there's a mostly, you know, B-listers. And maybe Damian Priest is in there. But aside from that, it's mostly like the B-listers and, no big deal. I don't like that, Mike. Every single guy, every top guy that is not holding a title, and maybe even some that are, should want to be in this Money in the Bank match.
Right, should be in Money in the Bank match, and that's the thing. And here's the deal. They did make a great choice. They did make a great choice with Becky Lynch.
Yeah, they did.
Becky Lynch should be in that match, and she is in that match. All right? And I would have – I mean, I know we've speculated that the match they want is Becky versus – Asuka, right? I mean, Money in the Bank is a heel thing, but I think Becky Lynch could carry it off as a face thing, you know. But we'll see what happens with that. And Becky Lynch is another one of these women, another one of these wrestlers that has at least two moves that she can use to finish people off, because we know what the disarmer does, but. That manhandle slam.
Yep. Right. She does have two. Look, I think Becky Lynch is probably going to win. But at the same time, I wouldn't be terribly disappointed if Io Sky won. That would be interesting if she picked Asuka. I'd like to see it. So what are we going to rate this? Well, I was really mad last night when the first segment ended because I said, well, there goes the fact that Dominic's in this, and there goes the fact that Cody might slip his way into it and really make this interesting. Overall, it wasn't bad. I'm going to give it a flat C. I think it could have been better, Todd, but it wasn't a disaster.
I'm going to give it a flat C as well.
Okay, so we have two C's, and let's go to Mike. Mike, what's your rating this week's for Raw?
I'm going to give it a flat C as well. And what I want to see in the next few weeks, especially from this thing with they're doing with Maxine, I want to see her, maybe not against somebody that's already in the company, but you can go to, you know, Baton Rouge or Mid-Hudson Valley or whatever, and find a local person to put against her to help her tune her skills. You know, show that person on TV, whatever, but have her, you know, eventually have her beat. She's going to have to work her way up, and the way to do that is put her against some local talent and have her show that she's improving.
Yeah, you know, Mike, what I would have loved to have seen last night is for her to try to do the arm drag, totally fail, and have Valhalla, like, clothesline the hell out of her. That would have sold Valhalla. Then Chad Gable could have, you know, had his head in his hands saying, no, you don't do it that way. I really, really have to teach you. I really, really have to teach you. That way you say, okay, we get it. She stinks. But he's going to teach her. And once he does teach her, she's going to get better. That, I think that would have been more effective than having her get over on the first shot against Valhalla.
Yeah, I think so too. But they can still, you know, salvage this.
I hope they do. It's starting to become a little interesting. My second favorite thing going on probably is what's happening with Alpha Academy, because both Chad Gable and Otis do have that charisma, and Maxine is pretty easy on the eyes, so I think she's going to eventually have that charisma. And they could be an important team. We'll see. Okay, folks, we will be back here on Friday with more Wrestle Chat Radio. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestle Chat Radio.